And hey, it's a Juno afternoon. Today is Friday, the 10th of August. I'm Ben Brown. This is, of course, a Juno afternoon. Thanks so much for listening. We have some great hosts today. We're going to hear about Bug Day out at Jensen Olsen Arboretum. Aaron Walker Toltz will be here with an update on Catholic Community Services. There's a single sock drive going on, and we've got a great story about Tongass Fish Pass that brought two men together. And Gigi Monroe will be here to talk about upcoming drag performances, including this afternoon's summer block party over at the Jack. So all that here on a Juno afternoon. Stay tuned after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Art Hughes, in for Antonio Gonzalez. A surprising bipartisan momentum is behind a congressional funding bill that stands the best chance in almost a decade of getting passed. Elected officials on both sides of the aisle also say the Interior Appropriations Bill makes significant gains for provisions important to Indian Country. Alaska Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski said the bill provides substantial funding for critical health and education infrastructure.
We do right by Indian Country within this bill. Both the BIA, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and the Indian Health Service, we have restored the cuts that were proposed of over $1 billion in critical program funding. The bill increases funding for IHS facilities program for construction, maintenance, and sanitation facilities improvements. We hear time after time after time in Indian Affairs as well as in the Appropriations Committee about the dire situation with so many of our facilities.
Murkowski also said the bill provides the full estimated contract support costs for Indian Health Service. The legislation passed both the House and Senate and is now in conference committee, a step that has not occurred since 2009. On the Democratic side, New Mexico Senator Tom Udall says the bill goes a long way toward fulfilling the U.S. government's trust and treaty responsibilities. But he also warns that the House version of the bill contains what he calls poison pill provisions that will doom final approval if they make it through the conference committee. Among those are language removing the gray wolf from the endangered species list and exempting the livestock industry from greenhouse gas restrictions. No Democrat voted for the House version. The devastating car fire in California may have an unintended benefit for river fish in Oregon. Hoopa Valley Tribal Fisheries Director Mike Orcutt tells the Eureka Times Standard that emergency operations are prompting officials to release more water than usual from dams upstream on the Klamath and Trinity Rivers. He says water flows from the Lewiston Dam are more than double what they normally are this time of year, which is helping spring-run fish to move more readily. Karuk Tribe Natural Resources Policy Advocate Craig Tucker agreed with Orcutt's assessment but says conditions further upstream, including low flows, trapped nutrients from the dam, and climate change, are causing significant algae blooms. The Tulalip Tribes in Washington State is opening a retail recreational cannabis store. The state-of-the-art Remedy Tulalip facility is on reservation land along busy Interstate 5 north of Seattle. The Everett Herald newspaper reports the store intends to tap tribal cannabis sources for their inventory. Business representatives say they plan to employ 70 people and have been recruiting workers for several months. An art exhibit is now on display at Disney World Resort in Florida and features Native artists. Sol Traverso reports.
Creating Tradition, Innovation, and Change in American Indian Art is the title of the new exhibit at the American Heritage Gallery at the Epcot Disney World Resort in Orlando, Florida. The exhibit will have three featured artists, such as fashion designer Lauren Aragon. He says there is similarity between his work and the theme of the exhibit.
And basically, that's what my work showcases, is that I'm reaching back into the past to be inspired by our traditions, our culture, and utilizing that to project it onto a new medium, a new art medium, which is fashion.
Other artists include Ingalik Athabaskan dollmaker Glenda McKay and Assiniboine Sioux dollmaker Juanita Groenthunder. The official Disney Parks blog says the exhibit is made possible through the Museum of Indian Arts and Culture in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and the Smithsonian's National Museum of American Indian in Washington, D.C. For National Native News, I'm Sol Traverso.
A correction to a story we aired Thursday. The Google Doodle of Mary Ross was designed by the company's artists and not by Aragon Starr. With National Native News, I'm Art Hughes.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is by Odawi Law Group, provider of Indian Law Solutions, and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite System.
Support by AARP. At AARP, we create and connect you to unique tools and programs to help you save money and tackle the issues that matter most to you, your family, and your community. What we do might surprise you. More at AARP.org. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
And it is about 6 minutes after the hour this Friday, the 10th of August. I'm Ben Brown. You are listening to a Juneau Afternoon. And with me now are Michelle Warrenchuk and Warren Jensen.
Warren Merrill, from
Jensen Olson Arboretum. I knew I was going to get a Jensen in there somewhere. So thank you so much for being here today. And we're going to talk about Bug Day, but we're also going to talk about the Arboretum generally speaking. So first of all, let's talk about Bug Day. What's going to happen with that?
Well, we have Bug Day this Saturday, August 11th, from 1 to 4. It's going to be a three-hour program with seven different bug stations, lots of activities. We do have a registration on ebright.com. We have 35 spaces, or we had 35 spaces, and as of this afternoon, only six spaces are left. So we're encouraging people to register. If by chance there's any, we will let people register on site, but we don't expect that there will be.
I would think if there's only six left, that's almost mathematically impossible.
Yep, they will probably get picked up this afternoon
and
rather
so,
quick.
So Bug Day, it sounds like it's an educational opportunity to learn about bugs.
That's right. Yes, we're going to learn about insects and arachnids. We're going to have bug stations that are going to talk a little bit about metamorphosis and all kinds of fun things.
And is this the first year there's been a Bug Day?
We had our first Bug Day last year, and it was a huge success, so we decided to really go for it this year. We picked up this Idaho from the Idaho Botanic Garden, where I used to work ages ago, and they've been doing this for a couple of decades now, and it's just been one of their huge programs. So we brought this idea north, and we're just going to keep going with it and keep getting bigger and better.
Now, the Jensen Olson Arboretum is, of course, a city and borough of Juneau facility, but it was left there as a bequest from the family that brought that into the city park system.
Yeah, it was gifted to the city by Caroline Jensen. She had a lot of foresight in saving the property. People were wanting to buy that out from underneath her and develop it, and she knew she had something special out there, and she preserved it. So we've been nurturing it ever since.
And it is open very much so during the summer months. What's the year-round access out there?
Yeah, we're open year-round. Our hours are Wednesday through Sunday, 9 to 5. And, yeah, we're open year-round. Once summer kind of winds down, traffic gets kind of slow, but we do have some real nice fall foliage. And then in the winter, it's just kind of magical. It's super quiet out there, especially if we've got a foot or two of snow on the ground. And I keep a path blown around the arboretum so people can stroll through there and find some of the benches and just enjoy the quiet of Pearl Harbor in the winter.
Right. Now, are you the caretaker?
I'm the arboretum manager and horticulturist.
So are you in residence?
Yes.
Okay. So, yeah, that you're out there making sure someone's
I'm
keeping
out there
an eye on.
Yeah.
That's what a tough job that's got to be.
Yeah.
You're a lucky man.
Yeah, I am. It's having waterfront here in Juneau is definitely sweet.
Yes. So just before we went on the air, I was commenting that I've noticed when I've been going out to Point Bridget or Echo Cove, that new parking lot facility really does make it, first of all, easier to find.
Yes.
And there's more space for people to come because people used to have to park on the side of the highway and it wasn't so easy. So let's talk a little bit about how that got put into place because it seems like a very nice enhancement.
Yeah, we've been trying to get our parking. That was our Achilles heel for forever. It's we had limited space down in the arboretum proper, and we'd been trying to get a proper parking lot built, and the stars finally aligned, and we've got 20 slots up there, and it's made a difference. People can find us a lot easier because a lot of folks just were like, we had no idea this was here until we saw this parking lot. So it's definitely a plus for the facility.
Well, well done. And, you know, I would say that many of the nice days we've had this summer when I've been headed out for a hike, it seems like almost all 20 of those spots have been filled up.
Definitely, yeah. It's with the nice weather, people have really just been coming out and enjoying it. Even on great days like today, there's still been people out there. So not as many, but you pick your day and, yeah, you can have the place to yourself.
As I tell everyone who visits Juneau and it's sunny, they should make sure they see it in all conditions, because you don't appreciate the 80-degree sunny day unless you've seen the misty 52-degree and raining.
That's true.
Like it is most of the time kind of a day.
Yeah.
So, Michelle, once again, if folks are interested in registering for Bug Day, you said there were just 6 spots left. Tell them the website they can go to, and is there any cost for this?
It's eBrite. And it's BRITE.com. And there is a $7 fee for the Bug Day, which covers costs.
And it's a bargain. Yeah.
It's a bargain.
That's a dollar per bug. I mean, if there's 7 bugs, you can't really go wrong there.
Yeah.
Really quickly, what are the 7 bugs?
Well, we have bug stations. So we have face painting, a photo booth, bug bingo, a caterpillar ring toss, bug crafts, race like a spider, and bug tattoos. And when you complete all your stations, you will get a bug passport book and a bugology certificate.
That is a pretty amazing array of things for people to do.
Mm-hmm. It will be a lot of fun for the kids. They really enjoyed it last year, and we're really looking forward to it this year. And looks like the weather's going to cooperate and have some sun tomorrow afternoon, so it should be super.
Yeah, I haven't given the weather forecast yet today, but it says partly sunny, and it almost got nice this morning. So I hold out optimism for the weekend as well.
Almost nice. Yeah.
Almost nice on Friday means beautiful on Saturday.
That's right.
All right. Well, Warren Merrill, Michelle Warrenchuk, anything else you'd like to share with our listeners on a Juneau afternoon?
Well, we just look forward to folks coming out tomorrow. And, yeah, don't forget that we are open year-round and Wednesday through Sunday, 9 to 5.
All right. Thank you so much, and I hope you have a great turnout for Bug Day tomorrow.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. Over a century ago, a Nebraska man named Solon Towne began to collect his favorite sounds, the songs of meadowlarks. According to his daughters, he'd saunter about their farm with a tuning fork in his hand, listening, then hurry back to his desk to transcribe the songs into musical notes. And to help him remember the songs, he added words. One meadowlark, Towne believed, warned farmers, "Hoopla, potato bug." Another was concerned about the eggs in its well-hidden nest. "Be careful, you'll break them." One just seemed tired of all that vocalizing, singing just as usual, while another sang his meadowlark heart out to his mate. "You're a lovely creature." For a long time, one song eluded Towne, though, until he discovered that a baker in Omaha by the name of Jay Burns was giving away a picture postcard of a bird with every loaf of bread. Suddenly, he had it. Towne told everyone he knew that the mystery song, from a meadowlark, translated into English as "Buy Your Bread from Jay Burns." For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
It is about 14 minutes after the hour, this lovely Friday, the 10th of August. This is a Juneau afternoon. I'm Ben Brown. I'm here with Kelsey Wood and Aaron Walker Tolis. And we're going to have an update on things going on at Catholic Community Service. So, ladies, welcome to a Juneau afternoon.
Thanks so much.
Thanks.
And, of course, I'll just say first and foremost, Catholic Community Service is not just for Catholics.
Absolutely. It's for everyone.
And it's not just one service, but it's a whole host of services. So maybe first and foremost, remind our listeners some of the great things that you do for our community.
Well, we have Hospice and Home Care of Juneau, well known and loved. We also have Southeast Senior Services, and I'll let Kelsey talk about the Bridge Adult Day Center, but we've got 10 senior centers across Southeast Alaska, Meals and Rides, that includes Meals on Wheels. Caravan here in town is us as well, along with the Child Advocacy Center, our safe CAC that serves all of Southeast Alaska.
Right, and that is where my late father, of course, used to work and do a whole lot of services for some kids who are having a tough time, and that's really an important part of the network of safety, I think, for young people in our community.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're seeing a huge increase in the number of kids getting referred to us right now. It's dramatic. It continues. It's the last, you know, 3-4 years, and especially the last year, 59% increase in the last year in the number of kids referred.
Wow. So how is Catholic Community Service meeting that increased demand? Because it's not like you've got physicians who are just sitting around with nothing to do to come in and do those exams and provide whatever referrals mm-hmm. that need to be provided.
Well, actually, there are 4 full-time staff at the Child Advocacy Center. And I have to say that I need to say a special thanks to the Gagin Foundation. They are amazing. And we only had 3 full-time staff up until just last month. And it was, we went to the state and said, wow, we've had so many more kids. We know the other CSEs across Alaska have had so many more kids. And they said, well, you know, they're looking at whether or not to increase our funding or not. In the meantime, the Gagin Foundation came forward and said, okay, we'll give you the money to hire another person. And of course, those folks are on site, and it's not just the exams. They do the interviews, the forensic interviews. They also do the advocacy. They work with the family. They help them through the legal process if they have to go to court. They do referrals to community services. And then we have a whole host of nurses and doctors who come in as needed to do those actual exams on site.
But it's a lot easier to get the medical professionals to do just that narrow part when
yes.
you've got your full-time folks doing the other array of services.
Exactly. The doctors and nurses come in and they do the medical.
Right,
and then we're
right.
there all the time. And we're on call. We're on call 24/7. Sometimes they have to get up in the middle of the night and just head to the Child Advocacy Center.
Well, the bad things that happen to the people you're serving, that doesn't happen on any set schedule. They often happen holidays. I think
Absolutely.
We know for domestic violence is obviously some of the highest incidences are in the middle of holidays or in the middle of the weekend when mm-hmm. functioning families are having a great time, and families that are not functioning very highly are often
that
having
stress.
A bad time. Yep, yep.
It's that stress of the holidays. And you know, we see a lot of seasonal variation in the number of kids coming to us. We notice a huge dip down in the summer, and it's because those kids don't have as many options for safe people to talk to when they're not in school.
Right.
And
right.
in the summer, they're more isolated. They're, you know, hey, summer vacation, if the family's doing great, is awesome. But if a kid is having a hard time, they need to talk to someone about the fact that they're not safe. It's harder to get to someone in the summer.
Well, it's encouraging to know that the Gagin Foundation, which does a lot of great things in our community,
Absolutely.
Has helped you out. What else is going on in addition to the Child Advocacy Center with Catholic Community Service?
Well, I just want to put a plug in for the Bridge Adult Day program, which is a program for people with Alzheimer's or related dementia of any age, or people over the age of 60 who are in need of a little bit more socialization and stimulation during the day. And we provide them a safe place to go and also give their caregivers a break, and they can know that their loved one is safe in a supported environment. So I just want to put a plug in that we do have openings at the program. So those who are interested, if you've ever been curious about what the Bridge is, give me a call. We can set up a tour and you can come check it out, because it's a really, really wonderful program that unfortunately is really underutilized in the community.
And it's located, of course, out there in Glacier Highway. People pass it on Egan Drive and they may look back and say, God, that's a big place for people to be playing bridge at. I think somebody actually asked me that once. Is that like a bridge club? I'm like, no, I think
not
it's a little more
the
than
same.
That. Yeah.
It's the same way the Glory Hole is not an awesome restaurant. I mean, the food is good, but that's not what they're there for.
Exactly. So what other updates do you have for our listeners about other things going on with Catholic Community Service?
Well, you know, I think it's important to point out, I know this is Juneau afternoon, but I'm going to go a little outside Juneau for a second. You know, I recently got back from Prince of Wales Island, and I just wanted to say, wow, every community in Juneau is different. And folks don't sometimes realize, if they're in Juneau, that Catholic Community Service is not only a large organization, we serve all of Southeast Alaska. And those senior centers, each community is different. Each senior center that we have is different. And I just really appreciated being hosted. I got to stay at St. John's by the Sea, the apartment above the church, and stay there and talk to folks, the parish out there, because we're trying to do some outreach right now to Catholic folks, since we are rooted in Catholic social teaching as a regional faith-based nonprofit, but of course we serve everybody and everyone's welcome at CCS. But it was great to go out to Prince of Wales and see how it was during the great weather, and it was gorgeous. But then to see our local senior center and get to people forget that it's not just CCS doing the work. It's our partners. And so the City of Craig, Craig Tribal Association, the Klawak Tribe, all of these are partners that we couldn't help seniors without. And I just want to say thanks to them for hosting me and being so supportive of our seniors out there.
So in addition to Juneau and Craig, I assume there's a facility in Ketchikan.
Yes.
And in Sitka.
Yes.
And what other communities in Southeast?
Oh, gosh. I got this on the air the other day, and I had to – I was like trying to – Okay, Haines, Skagway, Yakutat, Hoonah, Angoon, Wrangell, Cake.
Petersburg?
No, not Petersburg. Everyone wants to do Petersburg, and we're like, sorry, okay. No Petersburg.
All right, I'm sorry. I just had to get
you. You're trying to help, and I totally appreciate that. So, and then, of course, Juneau, Sitka, Ketchikan. Did I miss one?
Not that I can think of.
Okay.
That's a good 95% of the population of Southeast Alaska and the communities you've just enumerated, I think. So
we try to hit most of Alaska.
Outstanding. Well, it is a very diverse array of services that Catholic Community Service provides to the community. What are the volunteer opportunities for people who may want to get involved? And, of course, I'm sure there's opportunities to donate.
Oh, please do.
Donations are always accepted. But are there things that people can do in addition to give money to help meet the needs of the folks that you serve?
Sure. I know that we're always looking for Meals on Wheels volunteers. And then at the Bridge program, we have a whole variety of volunteer opportunities available. If you're interested in doing some gardening, we have a beautiful memorial garden that always needs a little love and care. And, if you have a subject you're very passionate about and you want to have a public speaking opportunity, give a group to a very forgiving group of seniors, test out your new talents. If you have an instrument that you play, if you want to do some music, there's always opportunities for that. Or if you just want to come help us, serve lunches or play cards with the seniors. There's always opportunities for that.
And if people want to first learn more about this array of services and then also reach out and maybe put their name in the volunteer hat, can that be done online or is there a contact number that people can call?
Yeah, we have our website up and running, ccsjuno.org.
And then, of course, you can call Kelsey directly at
463-6171.
And you can also call the main line 463-6100, and we'll get you wherever you want to go. I should say, you mentioned Meals on Wheels. You mentioned Meals on Wheels, Kelsey, as well. Juneau is an all – the Meals on Wheels program in Juneau, we at Catholic Community Service cook the food and put it in the containers, but that's all delivered by volunteers. The entire Meals on Wheels program in Juneau is supported and we're able to run it because it's all volunteers. It's like 100 volunteers 5 days a week going out and delivering meals and sitting with seniors and just checking on them, making sure they're okay. You know, if the seniors are sick, we see their Meals on Wheels volunteers walk in to check on them in the hospital. I mean, it's an amazing relationship, not just for the senior, but for the volunteers too.
And it's more than your Domino's. No offense to the Domino's, but but these volunteers are developing personal relationships with the seniors they're serving. So it is more, know when their birthday is. They know if something good has happened or if something not so good has happened in their lives. So it's sustenance beyond just food.
Absolutely. And actually, we're relaunching our volunteer program for our hospice program as well. We're really wanting to give more opportunities to folks, both our hospice patients who are at end of life and their families, as well as volunteers to have that opportunity. There's more training involved in that one, of course, because when you're working with folks at end of life and their families, you really want to make sure you do it right.
No, when I was a legislative aide back in the 90s, working for Senator Tim Kelly, I actually worked on the bill that instituted the first set of training standards for hospice in Alaska. Back then, it was kind of make it up as you go along.
Yeah.
And I know that has come such a long way. Mm-hmm. But having those standards in place, first of all, help with liability issues and things like that.
Yeah.
But they also provide a framework of things that volunteers need to know that they have to be able to do to provide the right kind of service.
Right. And, when someone's in that very critical – I mean, it's one of the most important things any of us will ever do is to die. And we want to make sure that whoever is going into that experience as a volunteer, they're completely prepared, they're confident, they're supported, and that the folks who are getting the service can be confident they're going to get what they need and they're connected the right way.
Well, it is an admirable array of things that Catholic Community Service does, so I want to applaud you both, Kelsey and Aaron, for doing what you do. Anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today on a Juneau afternoon?
No, just thanks to the Gagin Foundation and to all of our volunteers for everything they do, and our partners, the tribes and the cities, we couldn't do it without everyone's help.
It takes not just a village, it takes all of Southeast Alaska.
Absolutely, it does.
So ccsjuneau.org if you want to learn a little bit more.
That's right.
And thank you again, Kelsey and Aaron.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Support for this station comes from listeners like you and Copa, a handcrafted ice cream and coffee shop serving organic Sentinel coffee and with a cart downtown during the summer season. Ice cream flavors, online ordering, and more at coppa.biz.
Thank you.
And it is about half an hour past the hour, 29 minutes going on 30 minutes past the hour. I'm Ben Brown. Today is Friday, the 10th of August, and you are listening to a Juno Afternoon. And our next guest today is Rebecca Serbus, and we're going to talk about the single sock drive that she is spearheading. So welcome to a Juno Afternoon, Rebecca.
Thank you very much.
Now, if you could just tell our listeners, what is a sock drive and single socks? I think that's going to be the first question people may be asking. Why only a single sock?
Well, the single sock drive actually spun off from our very successful single glove drive we did over the winter, where we asked people to donate their single gloves. We were passing out hand warmers and tarps to homeless people during the winter. And someone asked me for gloves, and I told them, I'm sorry, I don't have gloves. And they're like, do you have one glove? All I need is one glove. And I realized when you don't have anything, you don't really care if your gloves match or your socks match, as long as you aren't cold. And, you know, a lot of people who even live in houses don't even match their socks, you know. So if it works, wear it. And a lot of people have single socks, and it's like a resource that they wouldn't even think that people wouldn't, you know, a single sock. But a single sock can make all the difference if you have no socks or one sock and, you know, you've been wearing the same sock for a week. The single sock drive, it's going to be we're pairing all the single socks to go to the Glory Hole, Front Street Clinic, Jammy, the Wear Shelter, Haven House, and last over the winter we were able to give hats and gloves and jackets to every single woman and child at the Wear Shelter, every single homeless person at the Glory Hole. At the we were able to provide Front Street Clinic and also Jammy with gloves for the whole winter, and also multiple bags of clothes for the Haven House.
And so, of course, you will take pairs of socks. You'll take new socks. You'll take new gloves. You'll take anything, but it can be in a single. It can be a stranded single sock that, because people keep those. I often have done that. I'm going to find the other one someday, and there's a little pile in the back of the sock drawer. And, you know, after a couple of years, you're never going to find the partner to that sock. It's not going to happen. So this is a great way to clean that space out and help someone who's in need.
Yes. It's very much they're always looking for their soulmate when all they really need is a partner.
As a foot to go on.
Yeah.
Exactly. So what this is great because you said it arose in your mind when someone said, can I have a glove? So it really was just another person expressing that need to you and you realizing there was a way for you to help meet that need.
Yes. You know, a lot of people, when they ask for things or they complain, people shut down and they usually think about, oh, yeah, I can understand that, instead of thinking instead, how can I fix this problem? You know, and it's a simple issue and it's a resource that's openly available for people to get. And we are accepting new donations. Actually, the Jammy and the Wear Shelter only will accept new packaged items. But we're also doing a really big outreach about it. The Dolphin Jet Boat Tours are offering 10 two-person whale watching tours for the first 10 people to donate $100 worth of new socks.
Okay, so if people are entered, that's very generous of the dolphin whale watching folks. So obviously we're grateful, you're grateful, we're all grateful to them for that. If people want to get involved in this, how do they go about contacting you, or is there another place where they can be dropped off directly to one of the institutions where you're helping the clients? How does that work out?
If you're just dropping off socks or clothing, we're also accepting clothing, shoes, any donations you'd like to give. The main drop-off boxes are at Foodland, Fred Meyer's, and the Nugget Mall Outfitters. But if you'd like to get a hold of me, you have a large clothing donation, or you'd like to pick up one of these great two-person whale watching tours, you can get a hold of me on Facebook. I'm Rebecca Blackson on Facebook. My email address is sacred.shell@gmail.com, or my phone number is 907-957-4251.
Well, Rebecca, it's admirable for you to be doing all this work just by yourself. Do you have some folks helping you out with this?
The Lions Club has helped me with the glove drive. Also, Second Wind, since the glove drive, has given me every 2 weeks at least two bags of clothing to give out to these different charities. And also Reliable were the ones who donated the boxes so we could put the boxes out. Also, they're on vacation right now, but when they come back, Hari Dave and Mukia, they are local people who do a lot of charity work, and they've been having the spot where I like sort the gloves and wash the gloves and everything with the hats and gloves and socks. So they are also helping me out.
So the name Single Sock Drive really doesn't tell the whole story. So I'm very glad you took the time to come on a Juneau afternoon, because it's a much bigger thing than just a single sock, obviously.
Yes, it's a thing where people realize like the littlest thing they have could actually mean the world to somebody else.
And that is that's really a great way to kind of encapsulate how we shouldn't take things for granted and remember how good we have it. All right. Well, Rebecca Serbus, anything else finally you'd like to share with our listeners today on a Juneau afternoon?
If you have any donations of any type that you'd like, you know, you just need someone to come pick it up. I know a lot of times that St. Vinny's and the Salvation Army aren't always accepting donations, but myself and Haridev and Mukia, if you get a hold of us, we will come and help you. We'll take your donations and find a charity that is in need for it.
And that really is something, because you're right. Sometimes you'll go by St. Vincent's or Salvation Army and they will say, no more donations right now. We're full up. We got to sort this stuff out. I know St. Vincent's just moved to its new location in the old Valley Auto Parts. So they've got some logistical things. So you're kind of an in-between step for people who have things they want to get rid of now before they can actually get to their final intended beneficiary.
Yeah, especially with everyone leaving for end of season. You know, St. Vinny's and Salvation Army really just kind of closed down at this point. And, you know, after garage sales, you know, if you have extra clothes, we're always looking for, and we're connected with so many charities. And also if there's other charities or outreaches, you know, we always are looking for new people to help.
Excellent. Well, Rebecca, thank you so much for doing the Single Sock Drive and for being on a Juneau afternoon. And I wish you all the best as you continue this important work, helping to take care of folks who are having a tough time here in our community.
Yes, of course. Thank you.
All right. Have a good afternoon.
You too.
The village of Newtok in Western Alaska is about to disappear. The land it was built on is eroding away, threatening not just the village, but a way of life.
Essentially, what you're really talking about is the preservation of the Yupik community, its traditional values, its identity.
Lessons from Newtok on the next Midnight Oil. Available Thursday at ktoo.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon. I'm Ben Brown. Today is Friday, the 10th of August. It's about 37 minutes after the hour. And with me now on the phone, I hope, are Lane and Chuck. Gentlemen, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, yes.
And which is Lane, which is Chuck?
This is Lane first, and then Chuck followed me up.
Okay, very good. All right, well, I'm so glad you're able to join us. And this is a story of a Tongass fish pass, and I guess I'll just...
Shelley.
And Shelley's here, too. Thank
you. Left the conference.
Oh, actually, Shelley left the conference. Okay, well, Shelley Delaney, of course, is the one who set this up. And we don't often do dual telephone interviews, so this is a technological first for me, and I'm glad it's working. Lane and Chuck, I will turn it over to you gentlemen to share with our listeners in a Juneau afternoon your unique story. So go ahead, please.
Lane, why don't you take it away? So... my name's Lane Bagley. I live in American Fork, Utah. 26 years ago, we had the opportunity to come up to the southeast part of Alaska as Student Conservation Association volunteers with the Forest Service to build a fish pass on Kuprinoff Island on Mitchell Creek, and had a wonderful experience, a lot of wonderful stories, wonderful friends. That's where Chuck and I met. The project was slated to be rebuilt last year, 25 years later, and my son at the time volunteered through the Student Conservation Association, or SCA, we'll call it, to join that. The project didn't happen, and it actually went forward this year, so both Chuck's son and my son are part of the crew rebuilding what we did 26 years ago. Right now on Kuprinoff Island. So that's the short story. We can certainly elaborate and talk more.
Well, it's pretty great that happened. Now, is that just pure serendipity that the two of them are there working in the same place you did, or was that something you helped arrange? Because either way, it's pretty amazing.
Well, for me, it was my son had heard the stories for his entire life, and he knew what a great love I had for the land and for the place and the people. And I stumbled across the project at the University of Utah as a young student on a cork board, because that was long before the day of finding your information electronically. And he actually had stumbled across it last year. I called the project engineer up and let him know that my son was interested, because it was such a great opportunity for me. And he actually got to look at Steve and my son's application, and so he got that first opportunity. Chuck's son was not old enough last summer and would not have been able to participate, but this summer was. So it was kind of just a fluke that he had found the project being rebuilt. We knew nothing about it until he had found it.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, this is Chuck. If I can just add my two cents, is that it was very providential, I think, because, you know, in 2016, my son, Cal, had announced that he wanted to get into wildlife biology, and I immediately thought about, you know, making connections and opportunities, and I thought, boy, you know, I should get a hold of my dear friend John Pickens, or known as Slim, and he was our boss. Lane and I had him as a boss back in 92, and so I looked up online to try to get, I had kept an infrequent contact with John. I had sent a letter here and there, and I looked up to see if I could get his contact information, and sadly, I found his obituary, and John had meant so much to both of us, and I sat there in my office and shed a tear when I found that, and then I got a hold of Lane to let him know about it, and another friend of ours, Scott Robards, who was on the crew, and so, you know, there's no direct line to Cal getting to rebuild the same fish pass I was on, but about a year before all of this began, it kind of all came back to me in trying to get a hold of John. And Lane and I and Scott had talked about trying to get up there to just to memorialize Slim in our own little small way, and now through this project, it's happening in a much more substantial way.
And tell us a little bit about where on Kuprianoff Island this is, and if you have plans to go out there at the end of the summer when your sons are done working on this, and maybe just be all there together in the same place and document what the final rebuilt product looks like.
Yeah, it's so it's on Mitchell Creek, which is on Kuprianoff Island. It's across the Narrows from Mitkoff, where Petersburg is. It's a pretty remote location. I don't think there's really any population or village in the general vicinity. But there is a ceremony that to dedicate the passage to the honor of our previous boss there, Slim Pickens, John, as he's formerly known as. And that's next week on Thursday, and we're going to be out there with our sons to officially honor John in that manner.
That's outstanding. And you'll fly into Petersburg and then take a boat over to Kuprianoff and probably have to hike a little bit to get there?
Yeah, and you can drive almost to the fish pass. There's logging roads that go right to it. And interestingly enough, this fish pass was built for sportsmen in mind rather than just commercial fishing needs. It's one of the few in the forest that's been built for that requirement, so there is access to it. It's fairly good access, but it is definitely remote. We've also had a big plaque that we've had made that the Forest Service and the Student Conservation Association have approved that commemorates the fact that it's been built twice by a group effort between the Forest Service and the SCA, and it gives a shout out to John Pickens as well. So we'll mount that while we're out there as part of the ceremony.
Well, that sounds great. And who knows, you know, even though I'm sure this one is being built with some newer materials than perhaps you gentlemen used back a generation ago, and the ones your sons are building, it will require some maintenance. So maybe your grandsons will be working on this 25 years from now as well.
Yeah, that'd be so
Well, if they do, well, we'll definitely come up again.
That's great. Well, Lane and Chuck, I very much appreciate your being on a Juneau Afternoon to share this story, and I certainly encourage you to make sure when you're flying through Petersburg next week to make sure the folks there hear about it, either through the pilot or through KFSK, the local public radio station there, because it is a great story, and I applaud you for sharing it with the world, and I think it looks like you're going to have a wonderful time when you have a reunion next week back up there on Kuprianoff Island.
Absolutely. Thank you for giving us an opportunity to tell the story.
Okay, well, thank you. Safe travels up, and keep doing the good work. And again, thank you for being on a Juneau Afternoon.
Thank you. Have a great afternoon.
Okay, bye now.
This broadcast is sponsored in part by Foodland Pharmacy, now open Monday through Saturday at the Foodland IGA in downtown Juneau. Foodland Pharmacy is locally owned and operated, and prescription refill requests and orders are welcome. More information at 796-2280. Thank you.
And it's about 51 minutes after the hour. I'm Ben Brown. Today is Friday, the 10th of August. This is a Juno afternoon. We've been listening to some music by Doug Adams with a Z, a guitar solo, and that last piece was called La Dolce Vita, The Sweet Life. And speaking of sweet lives, Gigi Monroe is here. How are you, Gigi?
Oh, hello, hello, hello.
And we've got some exciting things coming up, some of them very, very soon, right across the street at the Summer Block Party.
Yes, in just about 90 minutes, we're going to kick off with Gigi Monroe and friends. So I invited some of our favorite local drag performers, and we're going to do a couple sets of drag show for you guys this afternoon.
And what's great about this show is it's going to be some drag and then some belly dancing with the Daughters of the New Moon and then back to the drag.
See what's funny about that? We like to corset our bellies in and they just let them all out. And it's just fabulous. It is like just two different approaches, both super fun and entertaining and yeah, it'll be a lot of fun tonight.
I've been involved with these concerts in the park, as they used to be called a long time ago. But this is the juxtaposition I've never quite seen. And being lucky enough to be the master of ceremonies, I'm looking forward to it a great deal.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was an honor to be asked. And we always love opportunities to do drag in sort of unusual places and places that are open to everyone to come and that are family friendly and, you know, just really that nice mix of community folks that we got out here. And just to show you a little taste of what we do on a monthly basis at the Rendezvous.
Absolutely. And I'm glad that you mentioned that, Gigi, because, of course, all ages are welcome at the Jack for the Summer Block Party. But there is a beer garden. And tonight there will not just be beer, there will be shoveltinis. I will take responsibility for those. That's a ginger rhubarb syrup with some vodka and a little piece of candied ginger in it.
And hold the dirt.
Exactly.
Yes.
Hold that dirt till we break ground on the new Jack. That's right. So who are some of the performers we can look forward to seeing this afternoon?
Oh, well, we have, there's eight of us, as I mentioned. So we've got three drag kings. We've got Luke the Duke of Bell, Will Duya, and Robert Anthony. And so they're sort of representing the king community here, which is actually almost a little bit bigger than the queen community.
And that was not the case just a few short years
ago.
No,
it's amazing. It's just exploded and all sorts of people wanting to get involved and give it a try. And so I'm always open to that. And so we've had this recent kind of uptick in king performances, which is super fun. And then for the queens, we've got a brand new queen, Lola Monet, who this is only her fifth show, but she actually just got done performing at a drag show in Sitka last weekend. It was Sitka's first drag show ever, and she got invited to come over and join the festivities, and they had a packed house and a great show over there. So she's fresh off of a fabulous performance in Sitka.
And where in Sitka was the drag show?
It was at Mean Queen.
of course.
Of course. Where else would it be? But fabulous restaurant over there if you haven't been. But they have a downstairs sort of show lounge, cabaret space, and they transformed that into a drag show for the evening.
Outstanding. And then who are some of the queens we're going to see tonight?
And then, so in addition to Lola, we've got Shirley Wood.
I know her.
You may have met her before. she is one of our veterans, actually. She's one of the longest performing queens here in Juno, which is always very exciting to see her. And then we have Juicy Contour. And we got some sad news that Juicy is actually leaving Juno next month.
She's moving away,
so we can begin giving her a hard time about it tonight.
Absolutely.
and then we have Diamond De La Ghetto. She is the jewel of Juno, and she's one of our crafty queens who actually works at Joanne Fabrics. And so she's got all these access to some really fun and creative, crafty costuming supplies.
That's where they keep the rhinestones.
Well, I think she may be hoarding them.
Yes, indeed. Wonderful, wonderful. So in addition to drag at the new Jack Block Party over at the Jack this afternoon, you also have another show coming up at the end of this month. And then, as you said, they are monthly performances now at the Rendezvous.
Yes, we have just grown to that point where we have so many performers and we have wonderful, loving fans and friends who come out to support the shows that we're on a monthly basis now over at the Rendezvous. And the show this month is themed for summer. So it's called Heat Wave, and it'll be our sort of end of summer. It's the last Saturday of the month on the 25th. And we do two shows every month, and they're different. So 8 o'clock is one show, and then 10 o'clock is another show. So if you're an early-to-bed person, come out for the 8 o'clock. If you're a night owl, come out for the 10. If you're just a party animal and you love drag, come to both of them. We love it. And they're different shows. So we love putting on performances and just entertaining people and giving people an outlet to have some fun.
Outstanding. Well, Shirley Wood and I are going to be in Palmer doing the Juno booth at the Alaska State Fair at the end of the month. So we won't be there.
Nice.
But they are very fun shows at the Rendezvous. And thanks, of course, to Deb and Eric for letting you guys do that there.
Absolutely.
Well, Gigi, anything else you'd like to share with our listeners before you dash across the street and get ready for the show?
Well, I do have to finish gluing down my eyebrows, so I think that's it. Yeah, just come on out and have a good time tonight. It's free and open to everybody, and come support your local arts community.
Yes, we appreciate that at the Juno Arts and Humanities Council and the Juno Arts and Culture Center. Thank you very much, Gigi Monroe, and I'll see you very soon.
Thank you, Ben.
She's a babe, just a babe, still cavorting in her crib, eating breakfast with a bib, with her baby teeth and all her baby curls. She's a tot, just a tot, good for bouncing on your knee. I am positive that she doesn't even know that boys aren't girls. She's a snip, just a snip, making dreadful baby noise, having fun with all her toys, just a chickadee who needs a mother hen.
Almost at the end of the hour here on a Juno afternoon. I'm Ben Brown. Thanks for listening today. We heard about Bug Day at the Jensen Olsen Arboretum happening tomorrow. Aaron Walker told us, and Kelsey Wood were here from Catholic Community Service. We heard from Rebecca Serbus about the single sock drive. The two gentlemen, Lane and Chuck, with their Tongass Fish Pass story. And, of course, Gigi Monroe, who'll be performing just in a few minutes over at the Jack. Thanks for listening. The forecast is for some sun tomorrow and then back to some rain. It's going to be a lovely weekend. And as always, thanks for listening to a Juno Afternoon. And come back next week when we'll be back here on your favorite public radio stations in Alaska's capital city.
Oh, she's a child, a silly child, adolescent to her toes. And good heavens, how it shows. Sticky thumbs and all the fingers she has got. She's a child, a clumsy child. She's as swollen as a grape, and she hasn't got a shape where her figure ought to be. It is not just a child, a growing child, but so backward for her years, if a boy her age appears, I am certain he will never call again. She's a scamp and a brat, doesn't know it.